And let's get rocking. So here we are. Welcome to session 5, What and How to Poke Perspectives, which is actually where a lot of our beliefs get built from, is the perspective that we're standing in. I mean, if you're standing on one side of a street and you see an accident, from that perspective, you're not in the car, you don't know what's going on in the car or the other car. You only see what you see. But the unfortunate part of perspectives in the realm of patternicity, meaning the perceiving of patterns and then making meaning from that, the unfortunate part of perspective is that we assume that our perspective is the perspective versus it is a perspective. We're not standing in a what one, not even a 360 around on that same plane, meaning the plane of the asphalt. We're not standing in a global perspective surrounding it, nor are we standing in an internal perspective of what's going on inside the people. So from there, you know, our perspectives actually do affect what it is that we perceive and what it is that we experience, and then what it is that we conclude about what we've perceived and experienced. So perspectives is a great place to be poking. So we are going to go through a pulse check. We're going to take a look at perspective, as I've already started. We'll look at what locks the perspective, and we'll take a look a little bit more at that distinction, shift versus change, because that's always going to play. And then a little bit of perspective shifting, 5 blocks and what to do, and then we'll see what happens after that. So this is a question to start as a prompt, a pulse check. What perspective do you have regarding provocation now that may be different from how you saw provocation either before we started or when we first started? And welcome to everyone else who's joined us. Glad you're here. So there's the question. How do you see it? What are you seeing it do? And what perspectives are you still attached to regarding provocation? Any of those questions are up for grabs.
This is Steve. Just coming at it from the provoking part, coming at it from in a neutrally charged way, without an agenda. I mean, as coaches, I know we're not supposed to have an agenda, all right? But and pretty much that's the case most of the time. But then, I'll admit, there are times when I have an agenda, but after coming to this webinar, I'm becoming more relaxed with it, with the whole idea of provoking and not worrying about an outcome. It's I'm more relaxed, I guess. That's the phrase.
Mm-hmm. And with respect to the agenda, there is an agenda. As we talked about in the very beginning, the coach does have an agenda, and that is to fulfill the implicit agenda, which is to be provoking and evoking change. That's part of the agreement. It hasn't been explicitly stated that way often for people. But if we revisit the recognition that says they come to you for change, then yes, the coach does have an agenda. Now, the coach doesn't have an agenda to manipulate them in the particular direction, meaning when we provoke a perspective or a myth or belief, we're not provoking them so that they go to this other one. We're just challenging the one that's there so that it can be examined by the client to see whether or not it's useful to continue perpetuating that perception, that myth, that belief, that perspective, and all of the rest of the things. And if it is, then this is where this is where the refinement of that it's not our agenda is that we're not provoking in order for them to get our agenda and take it, have them become us. We're provoking so that they examine what's in front of them. They pull the curtain in front of the great Oz and see what's really there. What they do with what is there is up to them. So it's a both and. And that's probably why you're starting to relax into it, is that you're actually experiencing the kind of truth of that, that it is a both and. We do have an agenda. That doesn't mean we drive the call. But
right.
When we hear the opportunity to provoke, it is there for us to provoke.
Mm-hmm.
So we're actually fulfilling the agreement. The only difference is that we may now probably all add into our interview and our agreement up front the conversation that says, you know what, there's going to be times in which I provoke some of the constraints and beliefs or limitations and perspectives and stuff like that that might be not necessarily serving you. Is that okay as part of our interaction? Because if it isn't, then I don't know if I can proceed. Because otherwise all we're going to do is make nice for 60 minutes.
That's pretty boring.
And fairly predictable.
And predictable. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes, you did great. Put a star in the refrigerator.
But it's that's what I'm getting out of this, Michael, is I'm just so much more relaxed with it. And the way you're all about questions, obviously, that's where I'm at, too, is being in that relaxed state and that mindset, when you do provoke or poke, it's neutrally charged so that they can, they're welcome to it, they're open to it.
You know, yes.
They're not intimidated by it, yeah.
Yeah.
And also cool. You're asking permission.
Yes.
Because mm-hmm. I think that's such a big part of it is, well, first of all, having the relationship and then being very clear about asking, you know, having their permission to participate.
Yep. And you have a... or one establishes a general permission up front. And then if you're sensing in the moment, you're sensing acuity, that particular agility comes to play, and you go, oh, my intuition says this is going to be an uh-oh. It's useful to contextualize that for people, frame it for them, and then ask once again, reaffirm that the thing is there, because we don't want to assume their state is the same as when they initially gave the permission. Doesn't mean that we always have to do it before we do it. But if we get a sense, an intuition that says, this one's could be a little bit more challenging. I better check in. Because in theory, our clients are always changing. And they've had 167 hours of change in between this session and the last. Might be subtle, might be nuanced, might not necessarily be observable, and we don't know what their true state is when they show up. Even if they're showing up in front of us, we might think we know. We don't really know what's really going on always inside someone else. So cool. Who else? What perspective do you have regarding provocation now? How are you seeing it? What are you seeing it do? question just occurred to me. What are you self-provoking? What have you called into your own life that may be provoking you and signaling an upgrade of sorts?
I can speak to that. As soon as you said that, it popped, because that's where I think the provocation really lies for me. I'm not afraid to provoke someone else or have any really thoughts about it. If it comes to me, I'll ask a question, and if the client doesn't want to answer it, that's okay too. They'll let me know. But for me, on a personal basis, I think that this this type of provocation for me has been an awareness, you know, challenging myself, the beliefs. If that isn't provocation, then I don't know what is. To go in and look at the reasons why I exist, why I function the way I do, why I think the way I do. Where do these beliefs, where do they stem from? You know, why has it been this way? And what can I do to make the change and then the shift?
Yes.
So that in itself is, you know, for me is a great step to take.
What an excellent question. Where do these beliefs stem from?
Well, I think I know. I mean,
yeah.
I don't think they were always mine. I think I just adopted them.
Well, we adopt them, we transform them, we change them, we modify them to fit. We pick them up from here, kind of like, you know, sometimes, yeah, sometimes going through the leftovers in the fridge of somebody else's dinner. And we make them our own.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't that the phrase? We make it our own.
Mm-hmm.
But what I love about the question is that inherent in that question, where do these beliefs stem from, is first and foremost a challenge that they are not a truth, that they are a construction. So where did this come from? What was the process whereby I cobbled together this belief? Where I threw it into the stew pot along with, you know, the potatoes of indoctrination from some direction or another, and then the input from some books and movies, etc. What did I throw in that stew pot? How did it get thrown in there? And in that moment, you know, they have that piece of equipment in the fire department. I refer to this a lot. It's called the jaws of life. When somebody's trapped in a car or something like that, and they put the thing in there and they wedge it, and mechanically it opens it up so that the person can get out when a car door is crashed in a crash. You know, it's in that moment we pry the jaws of life in between the truth and the story of it. It's no longer the same. We pry it in between our identity and the belief. You know, I am this belief, and we pry that open. We go, no, it's something I have, like I carry it around in my pocket. And it may be an heirloom, so it has value for me, but it isn't who I am. In some cases, it is an inheritance. It's a cultural inheritance as well as a family of origin inheritance. But the best part of it is actually the asking of the question, because it puts one on a Google search for what's all involved. And that illuminates the awareness of how this came to be, how it functions, and whether or not it still serves. Or does it constrain? Or does some part of it serve and some part of it constrains? So a modification is appropriate. Without asking the question, without someone like one of you provoking someone in their belief, whatever it is, without them provoking it, most of the time we simply lapse into a kind of unconscious replaying of the tape of that. And it just grounds it more and more in the seemingness of truth. So, beautiful question. Anyone else want to share before we move forward? Okay, let's rock. So, what is perspective? This is part of the short definition of it. It's a mental view or an outlook. It's a way of seeing things. And note that a mental view does not equal an actual view. We have our own particular set of glasses that we wear when we're viewing anything, whether they are the glasses of a belief, whether they're the glasses of a role, a history, or whatever it is, let alone where we're physically standing when we view it. So the view that looks like it's a clean view is actually an interpreted view. I saw these, like, you know, this Russian doll symbol made out of kiss figures. I just had to put it in there. Perspective is a relationship of aspects of the subject to each other or to a whole. So these Russian dolls, in the form of the kiss band, you know, they all have a relationship. One, there's the external relationship. The other is the internal relationship, meaning in this situation, one fits inside another, fits inside another, fits inside another. The perception of the relationship is not always an accurate reflection of reality. And this is what we're poking. One of the very first and foremost pieces with perspective is that we are poking that it is an accurate reflection of reality. It is simply a reflection of reality. Perspective is also a subjective evaluation of relative significance from a point of view. It's the ability to perceive things in their actual interrelations or comparative importance. This bed is too big. This bed is too small. This one is just right. Except that doesn't hold true for all of the bears. For the big bed, for the big bear, the big bed is right. So it has comparative importance. Okay. These are the things that lock perspective, because I wanted to get right to these so we could spend some time with it. Fear, I'll lose it if I shift. Needs, I won't get X if I shift. Denial, there's no need to shift. History, it's always been this way, so no shift is actually available or possible or even relevant. And ignorance, didn't even know I saw it that way. So let's play with that. Who has a perspective that you might have some inkling that is will be useful for you to have a shift with?
This is Amelia.
Yes.
I'll volunteer.
Okay, great.
Okay. It could be a cultural belief, but it's a belief that I've been holding on to for years now. Like, in our family system, when you marry into the family, you call your parents-in-law as mom and dad.
Uh-huh.
You don't call them by their first name. It's
uh-huh.
very disrespectful in our belief,
right.
in my belief. And then now I have a daughter-in-law that my son married 2 years ago, and she just calls me by my first name.
Uh-huh.
And I'm having difficulty accepting it.
Ah.
Because I'm used to.
Yes. So there's a certain amount of conditioning, programming
yes.
about that.
Yes.
So...
And it's the same with her. She has a conditioning as well.
Yes.
Because she thinks I'm not her biological mother, so she should not call me mom.
Yes. And both perspectives have an accuracy to them.
Yes. And how
However,
do I get to the point of having a middle ground? Like.
Great. So are you open to playing with this a little bit?
Yes.
Shall we poke around with this? Okay. So, what sense of yourself will you lose if you give up the perspective you have held for so long?
I feel like the belief that I have of respect is going to be taken away.
Mm-hmm. Now, can you feel any energy surrounding you about the projection of that possible future?
Yes.
Okay, good. I'm just going to ask you to close your eyes so you'll notice it a little bit more sensitively. Notice how far outside your body that particular belief extends, the one that you, respect will be taken away. See if you can sense how far the energy field of that projection goes out beyond you.
It's even outside my house.
Yes. Listen, it can go and fill up the whole solar system. That's okay.
Yes. Huge.
Yes. And so it may also track back through time at the same time. Can you sense that? Okay, good. So now I'm just going to ask you to go to the farthest edges of that, and when you get to the edge where that projection of that you will lose respect stops, let me know.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay,
got
good.
It.
So now I'm just going to ask you to notice that there is something outside that, a different kind of energy outside that projection. What are some of the qualities out there?
Understanding?
Uh-huh. What else? What else does it feel like to be out there? Just kind of let yourself slip outside that projection of the fear of loss of respect. What's it feel like
scary.
Out there? Pardon?
Fear.
Fear. There's some fear out there.
Yes.
Okay, good. Then from there, I'm just going to ask you to extend out, see how far that fear extends out.
Oh, my gosh. Huge.
Yeah, we have layers of this one.
Yes.
Yes, it's like concentric circles, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes. So go out to the farthest edge of the fear concentric circle. And when you're there, let me know.
Yes, I'm there.
Okay, good. What's it like outside the edge of that fear boundary?
It's freeing.
Okay.
There's freedom outside it.
Okay, good. So I'm just going to ask you to kind of float in the freedom for a little bit. Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay. And while you're floating out there in that freedom and just drifting in there, there may be other words that occur to you about the qualities of the energy you're experiencing. What are some of those words as well, besides freedom?
Just love.
Just love. Yes.
Love.
Yes.
There's peace.
Yes. And can you get a sense, while you're floating in that place of freedom and love and peace, how vast and enormous that energy is that's surrounding those other concentric circles.
It's huge again.
It's huge, isn't it? Yes. Okay. So now in this place of love and peace and freedom, can you see that the entire projection that you would lose respect is just a story that's being made up, that was grounded in a cultural perspective, but nevertheless it's a story? Can you see that?
Yes.
Okay. And now, can you also see that the fear that you would lose all of that respect and the fear of the loss of sense of self because that respect was gone, can you also see that that's a projection as well? And another story, layered on the other story.
Yes.
Great. So while you're noticing that, you may be noticing that those concentric circles or fields of fear and loss of respect fear, you may be noticing something's happening to them. They may be shrinking. They may be dissipating like fog in the sunlight. They may be just popping out of existence. So what's happening as you sort of float in the freedom and peace and love?
Yes, it's shrinking.
Yeah. Okay. Can you also now see from where you are that the only thing that was keeping those stories alive was you inside the bubble of it, and that when you took yourself outside of it, there was nothing to sustain it?
Yes.
It was your life energy that was feeding that. When you take your energy out of it, there's nothing to hold it together. So feeding those particular perspectives and fears, is that really a great use of your life energy?
No.
No. So what's happened to those two fields now?
Well, the field of freedom, love and peace is eating up the field of fear.
And what's happened to the one about the respect thing?
It's
is that even still?
Up, well,
pardon?
It's being overtaken.
Shrinking.
Yeah,
yes.
Shrinking.
Mm. Yeah. Because what it appears that you were after was the experience of love. And it also appears, I don't know, that the perspective was that respect equals love. And without respect, you can't have love. And you get the experience right now that that's actually absolutely not true.
Yes.
So now, as you look at how she communicates with you, can you see that she's communicating out of love?
Yes.
Yeah. So when you consider her not calling you mom and calling you by the name that you've been living by most of the life, because in fact, the name you've been living by most of your life has been the name that you've had much longer than the name mom, the title mom, because, you know, there was a whole bunch of years wherein that title did not apply. She's actually addressing you more as the totality of you than she is of the role. Can you see that from here?
Yes. I can feel the shift now.
Yes.
Oh. You give me that perspective of having my name is more of a totality of myself. More
yes.
Than the role of a mother.
Yes, it is.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So how does it feel?
Freeing. I feel more free and happier.
Great.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for being willing to volunteer. That was a perfect example. So I just want to open it up for a moment. And see what comments or thoughts are rolling around out there, or questions you have. That, by the way, was, just to remind you, that was the C technique. And in particular, what was notable about that was that it was a C technique that had layers to it. And the way I know that it wasn't complete when she got to the fear outside the loss of respect was that ultimately outside and surrounding all of it is something more akin to love, peace, freedom, etc. When we're in connection with the essential kind of energy, neutral energy of the universe, we'll find those aspects there. Up until then, we won't. So, any thoughts, comments, questions you all want to share?
This is Sherry. What keeps popping for me is that you helped her give herself the gift of self-compassion and mm-hmm. also of her daughter-in-law. And that was the word that just kept popping in my head when I heard what you were doing.
Mm. Yes. We were addressing four of the five at once. Four of those five elements of what Locke's perspective. Fear, I will lose X if I shift. Needs, I won't get X if I shift. The fact that she was open to shift said that denial wasn't in place. So the only one was history, mm-hmm. it's always been this way. And the ignorance, I didn't know that I saw it that way. And that's a very subtle one that only came in at the very end. Not knowing that how she had seen it was that she was being addressed only by the role, not by the totality of her entire life. And there was a limitation in that. And an identification with the role. As in, I am mom. No, yeah, it's just a job you took on. It's not your identity. Because if you were mom, at the outset of birth, you would be mother, mothering. You don't, for a good number of years of your life. So who else? What else did you notice? Well, let me ask a different question then. Without this tool, this particular tool applied at this point in time, and without this frame that we're looking to unlock the perspective that's holding her in place and thereby holding her in a situation, what might the conversation have gone like? We could have talked about strategies, we could have talked about communications, we could have talked about trying to persuade the other person to their view, trying to see their point of view, et cetera, et cetera. But without that, but with all that energy underneath, it would still be there.
That would have been more of a, let's see, more of a linear conversation.
Yeah. Strategic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And almost trying to emotionally morph oneself into something like forgiving or morphing oneself into compassion, rather than when we absence what's locking the perspective, the natural expression is compassion and love and connection and openness. See, we historically have spent much of our time trying to persuade people into that direction. which is hard. If it was that easy to let go of someone's belief from a linear approach and just go, let me just let go of this and drop it on the floor like you would drop a hammer.
But Michael, you connected with her at a different level from the intellectual. I mean, you connected with her at a place in her being where it touches her emotions, her feelings, and from there, I mean, it's amazing how quickly and how easily she shifted.
Mm-hmm. Because that's
versus,
where it's locked.
Yeah. Because as you said, if you're strategizing, I mean, you can go into all, you can talk everything, you know, ad nauseum, but you can't. You really got to go to that place to unlock that energy.
Yes. That's a great way. And you're exactly on the money with it. The connection is from a different place to a different place. And this is my assertion in the evolutionary coaching model. This is what people are actually seeking when they come to you. And the more adept you get with all of these tools, as well as with the constructs around masterful provocation or evocateur or the agilities, the more adept you get with all of this, the more you will notice that people come to you with an openness to this kind of work. And the more you will see and experience shifts rather than simple changes. And the more you will also see them shift themselves. That's the coolest. Because what happens is they then step into evolutionary transformation rather than transformation from one fixed point to another fixed point. So, shifting fear uses the C or the core. Anything else will simply rubber band back to the fear because the energy hasn't shifted. I use that picture of a person inside a Zorb, that big plastic bubble, for a very particular reason. That's what it's like. We're living inside that story. We're living inside that projection of reality and then rolling around through the landscape thinking we're encountering the landscape in its full reality, except there's always this something in between us and the experience of that reality. And the core is simply going right down into the center until there's nothing left to feel of that energy.
Michael, this is Steve. I haven't had a chance to fully look at all the PDFs of these techniques.
Mm-hmm.
Does it talk about when to use each?
Yes, but I can go ahead and do that right now. Eventually, actually what will happen as we, you know, presumably, at some point in the future, you may engage with the agilities, the masterful agilities, those nine agilities courses, anybody. Eventually, your sensing acuity gets to know, okay,
mm-hmm.
From an intuitive place because you are in the ongoing experience of coach as portal rather than coach as container. So you won't know from an intellectual place as frequently. When we attempt to identify from an intellectual place, what will happen is it will bounce back and forth between feeling confident with it and not feeling confident. When we do the kind of internal absencing ourselves, then what will happen is that it will it will be present in you to the same degree that knowing with certainty an action is to take place. And you've all had that experience. However, in the interim, the general awareness is that when something is a projection, an extension, an expectation, something that is a future thing, as you remember, she said, "If this perspective leaves, then I'll lose respect. And then if the respect leaves, it was the fear of everything that she had built that was a projection. So it's all about what will happen or what hasn't happened that's supposed to happen. Okay, so it's in that realm. Expectations, future projections, that area, that's the C technique. That's when we're caught inside a story of what may happen that we don't want to happen, or what has happened that we think should have gone some other way because we made a projection about how it's supposed to go. Generally, that kind of thing, future-oriented especially, is a C technique piece, helping one see the story from outside the story. Now, and that also means that the energy is kind of radiating from somebody, meaning they're kind of caught in the field of it. Okay? The second one, the core technique, the general approach is when it is sharply noticed inside someone's body. That tends to indicate that there was a previous experience, maybe even a pre-verbal conditioning piece, that anchored it in the body in an energy pattern there. When the energy is acutely noticed in the body, then it's optimal in most cases to go right into the energy there. Sometimes you will have both occurring, meaning a past experience, because that's usually what's landing in the body and it's stuck there. A past experience will also then at times create a projection of the future. How to discern which to apply with that is to simply ask, which of the two feels the most intense right now? Is it more compelling outside, or is it more compelling inside? That tells you, go first where it's more compelling. One special case, if people are at it for a long time doing internal work, there's one special case here, and that will be that there is something, a projection of an expectation that says, I'm afraid of what will happen if I actually resolve this energy inside my body. And the more you do this, the more your intuition will tell you that. But if people have been at it for quite a while, then it's probable that they have what's called a gatekeeper. And the gatekeeper is basically saying, I don't want to get rid of this because for some reason it's been serving me. It's familiar, it's serving me, and I'm afraid of what my life will be like. There's the projection. I'm afraid of what will happen if this is gone and completed. So does that kind of put it in a nutshell for you, Steve?
Yes, very good. Crystal clear.
Good. Now, you know, I didn't want to cloud all of that with the recognition that I use muscle testing in the beginning to discern all of that, which is kinesiology, which is the recognition that your muscles resonate with things and they don't resonate with others. You know, they resonate one way with the word yes and another way with the word no. So I've had some training in that, but that's not something that I can necessarily do over the phone to train others in that. It's more useful to do that in person. But those are all the things that I have come to know are indicators in particular direction. So any question about those two? Yes, go ahead.
No, I just said thank you.
Oh, okay, great. Any question about those two techniques and the application? at some point in time, what we may do is just have you all buddy up and practice with somebody. And because you have the script, you can just read the script. And this is one of the things where just reading the script for the technique works.
Really?
Yes, you can read the script to somebody. If you sense that the energy is stuck in their body, you can just read the script, follow the script, and it'll work. Until you so know the essence of the script that the language that you use as part of it, you know, modifies more toward your languaging. But you can do that. That's the value of the script. So if you're working with somebody and you get a sense of it and say, hey, I want to try this with you, would you be open to it, and et cetera, and you just have them close their eyes, you provoke the energy up in their body, which is part of what we're doing. You find out, or you provoke the energy outside of them. Once you know that, then you go, okay, so just, you know. And it is best when their eyes are closed, because people are more attuned to what's going on when they take their main processor offline. And I say main processor, that applies to people who are sighted. That's their main processor. Cool. So, shifting needs, getting one's needs met by others. That's the word that's on top. I'll have to change that to white. Getting one's need met by others. Here's one shift to getting one's needs met by oneself. I think of this in terms of hungers. Or actually, to really put it simply, this shift is a very powerful shift, because a lot of people go into relationships, they go into situations or business or whatever you want to call it, to get their needs met, which always puts you at the mercy of whatever the mechanism whereby you're getting your needs met or your hungers fed, so to speak. I think of it as hungers because it's easier to talk about that. So imagine you have a hunger for air, in the same way that somebody might have a hunger for attention or a hunger to feel powerful. Okay? So what happens? Well, if you have a hunger for air and you're getting that hunger fed by someone else, what are you doing? You're basically getting mouth-to-mouth for your air. So if we walk around trying to get our hunger fed or our need met, so to speak, by someone else, that's what we're doing. I call it dining out versus dining in. Let's just quickly take a look at what happens when you dine out. What are all of the forces you're subject to when you dine out? Let's just do a quick riff on this. Anybody can play. What are all the things you encounter when you're dining out?
Judgment.
Judgment, yeah. What else? And even just look at the analogy of dining out. When you're physically dining out, what do you run into?
Someone else taking care of you.
Someone else taking
you,
care of you. Yep.
Waiting
serving
on you.
You. Someone else deciding the menu. Meaning you go to any restaurant, the menu isn't infinite, right? They may have a list of choices, but nevertheless the menu isn't infinite. What else?
Possible just, unsanitary conditions.
Yes, possible unsanitary conditions. Great analogy for what may be happening when you're getting your hunger for attention met by someone else. Okay,
well, there's lots of distractions.
Lots of distractions. Yep. Now, is the food always prepared the way you want it?
Nope.
Nope. Does it always come with all the vegetables in that restaurant or all the meats that you might want to? Nope. Do you sometimes have to wait in line?
Yep.
Or actually you have to hunt to find a parking spot? Right?
You even have to look for the location.
You have to look for the location, yes. You have to look for the location. And do you also have to contend with other people in the environment? You know, there's no restaurant that you go to that is just you. And in most cases, unless you're going fast food, in most cases, it's much more costly than you could pay for the same thing at home. But imagine, for those of you who eat meat, buying a fillet. You're going to pay for the meat. And yes, you have to take the action of preparing it, but it's not going to cost you the $20, $30, $40. Look at the ambiance. What about the music? You have to deal with the music that's there, don't you? You have to deal with this. Yes, go ahead.
And also the ingredients could be poisonous, like they can have MSG.
Yes. Yes. That's what happens when you dine out for what it is that one you might call your hungers or your needs. You also put yourself, and here's the real killer, you put yourself at the mercy as to whether or not the restaurant is open when you want it to be. You could have your favorite Asian fusion cuisine restaurant where you go and get all this wonderful food, and guess what? Not open at 4 a.m. when you're hungry.
Isn't there a control issue there, too?
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So when you dine at home, you get to make it how much of it you want, the size of the portion. You get to make it come with exactly whatever it is that you want. Like
where
last night.
It.
Yep, when you want it.
Where and so forth.
Where? You can change the ambiance. You can put on whatever music you want. You can change the lighting if you feel like it.
And you can have the freshest products?
You can have the freshest products, yes. So when you get your needs met first, and this now I'm going to shift to the shopping metaphor. If you go shopping when you're hungry, what's it like?
Get a lot more than what you really went for.
Yes. In fact, a whole bunch of things look good.
Mm.
When you're really hungry, wow, those chocolate-covered rosemary leaves look good. You know? It's like all of a sudden there's all sorts of things that look good.
So that means you accept anything sometimes.
Yes. Exactly. Now, what's it like when you're fed and you go shopping?
Well, your needs are met.
Yeah, your needs are met. So what do you shop for then?
According to your own standards.
Right, according to your own standards. So you go shopping for just what you need. Big difference, shopping when you're hungry, shopping when you're not. Now the next shift is shifting from needs to values for life orientation. If my needs are what drive me, if my hungers are what drive me in life, what's going to happen? It's going to be a constant surge, you know, like a wave and trough experience. I get some, I'm temporarily fed, I get sated, and then I have to go get it again. I have to go get it again. I have to go get it again. In addition, it's the price. And when others sense your needs, they can control you. Bosses use this one all the time. If you need to have a need for recognition and a boss senses that, they will play you like a fish on a line. However, if you're living from the expression of your values, the more general, universal principles in the world, you're now much closer to the expression of you than what drives you. And then the last shift, the biggest shift, is shifting to the ongoing experience of wholeness so that one doesn't have to have emotional needs met, you know, requiring being met in the first place. Because in wholeness, you're actually not missing anything. Herminia, did you notice in that, in our, that when you were experiencing that peaceful, free space, didn't feel like there was anything missing?
Yes, indeed.
Yes, so you didn't need respect. It became an irrelevant notion.
And there is no pain or disappointment. It doesn't
yes.
even enter.
It doesn't even enter.
Yeah.
That's the bigger shift for people to make. Now, you can shift people in stages or you can shift them right to it. Denial. This one was the one that was in the middle. Denial is most often shifted by extreme provocation of the consequences of the continuing state of denial. Usually, that's not one that we have a whole lot of luck with in the engagement of the shift. Because often, not only do we need to be the messengers of that shift, but typically what has to happen is some sort of compelling, not epiphany, but circumstance that has one shift out of denial. And even then, people have died in denial. This is why when you get into, in a conversation with somebody and the denial is so strong, regardless of how much you put it in their face, and it is never going to be countered by facts because the nature of denial is so deeply identified with whatever is being held that the risk of the loss of sense of self is so enormous, it can't even consider it. So usually, you know, in the metaphysical terms, the universe has to present a massive provocation. For a person. You can alert somebody to the denial of it as a seed. You can challenge it to whatever degree it appears for you to challenge, but the expectations of it have to be appropriate. The distinction between denial and skepticism in the world, the language distinction, is that a skeptic will change their belief given sufficient evidence to the contrary. Denial, in most cases, you could pile up evidence after evidence after evidence, and it requires something larger than that. I tend not to play with denial, simply because that's not my gravity. My gravity is not to drag anyone kicking and screaming to success. You know,
Michael.
Yes.
This is David. Is this? Are we talking about going into the realm of the uncoachable here?
The uncoachable for the moment.
For the moment, yeah.
Okay. Doesn't mean that uncoachable is eternal. But for the moment, on that topic, one may be uncoachable. And what I mean is it's not that they can't be coached, is that they just flat out don't want to shift. So basically, you can't force coach someone past where they want to go.
Yeah. Got it.
That, to go back to Steve's conversation earliest, that is forcing an agenda. I'm going to break you through your denial at that point, when you, if you have that conversation going on in your head, your ego has been hooked.
Yep.
You're only there, and this is the language that's useful for me, I only do the coaching that's available. Because that's all that's there. I can't do any more coaching than is available. And I also don't have the arrogant assumption that it's a, you know, up to me and I have some sort of masterful power that's going to shift people against their will.
Yep.
And I don't necessarily talk of them saying that they're uncoachable at this point in time. What I do say is that it doesn't look like coaching is the best place for this, at least not with me. Because
mm-hmm.
I'm not a match for that moment.
Yeah.
It may well be that some other agent, so to speak, of the universe is a more appropriate match, and by me being willing to get out of the way, that can be brought to them.
Ah.
This is where my ego isn't attached to whether or not I am the agent of their transformation or evolution. I don't have to be. I'm only the agent of, or the portal for anyone's transformation or evolution for whom I am the portal,
uh-huh.
an agent of their transformation and evolution.
And in that moment.
Yes, and in that moment, absolutely. And when I'm not, I'm not. So while I say things like, I can coach anyone who wants to be coached, yes, that's true. However, it is not necessarily for me to coach them. It may be that there is something else that needs to happen. And I ain't it. It's very freeing, isn't it?
It is. That was beautiful. I feel pretty good after that.
Good. Now, shifting history is also a challenge, but it's useful. It can be done. Shifting by challenging the views of some element in the timeline or conclusion that was drawn from the event and helping people stand in the question, what if I'm wrong about how I saw that event? Because we tend to see it from where we saw it and think that the conclusion that we drew out of what we saw, the interpretation we made, is truth or accuracy. That's why, why I recommend the movie Vantage Point. And you have the experience during that movie of seeing it from one particular vantage point, and then they present more information. And then you go, oh, that wasn't what was going on. This was going on. And the minute you have that, then they'll present something else, and you go, oh, that wasn't what was going on. This is what's going on. It's a quite wonderful movie. Shifting ignorance. Sometimes all it takes is getting someone to look where they need to look. This goes back to an earlier conversation we had about... Love that picture, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, if the solution is to the left, the challenge isn't whether or not they can see it. The challenge is getting to look to the left. And by the way, ignorance isn't a bad thing. There's a bunch of things of which I am ignorant. There's a massive amount of them of which I am ignorant. That doesn't mean I'm stupid. Just means I do not have the knowledge of. I am not aware of. I'm fine in the levels of ignorance that I have about many, many subjects. And every now and again, I'll look there. So, with this information about shifting perspectives, how are you going to now view challenges in your life? or what's changed about provocation for you? I came across this recognition at one point, this perspective. For some, that cricket is good luck. For some, it's a delicacy. For some, it's an invasive pest, which is true. All that and more. For a scientist, it might be an essential part of the cycle of life. For a bird, it might be everyday food. So, given some of the challenges in your life, and I just want to hear from a couple people here as we close, how are you now going to view those challenges? If you allow yourself to sink into, what if my perspective about that challenge isn't accurate?
Michael, this is David.
Yes.
Something that just came to me is very strange about neutrality and wholeness. Somehow they linked together inside me as far as the provocation is concerned, really coming from that neutral slash whole place. I mean, maybe that's the new story I made up.
No, that's a good linkage.
A lot of times neutrality has in the past felt to me disconnected somehow, and I didn't, certainly my mind couldn't grasp it. But when you mentioned wholeness earlier on the needs part, that third one, kind of outside the emotional roller coaster, or the emotions, or, you know, the emotions may still happen, but we're not caught by them as if we're inside them, something clicked inside me.
Wonderful.
This is Aminia.
Yes.
What I would rather ask for myself is, how can I shift my perspective so that I am meeting my own needs instead of others having the control of supplying my needs?
Great.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. Perfect example of that is when someone says, well, I have a need or a hunger to be heard. My question for them in those early shifts, the first one or two, is, so what of you, what messaging from you are you not listening to? From you to you. Because if we keep going outside ourselves for the need to be heard, typically, it means we're not paying attention to something inside us that's seeking to be heard from us, to us. When we seek appreciation from others, it's typically a reflection that we somewhere, somehow, are not appreciating ourselves. So if you go through that exercise of what is it that is a need that I constantly seem to seek outside there, and then you go, what has me not giving that to myself? Cool. Anyone else here before we close? Okay. So this week I'm inviting you to challenge a perspective, some perspective in your life that you've been holding. Not because you need to dismiss it, because you may need to understand the mechanics of it and how and where it's functioning in your life. But if you're viewing something as a challenge, maybe you're not seeing what might be possible in the situation.
Damn you, Michael.
That sounds like a perfect place to close, Steve. Great. Thank you. Thank you for your ongoing and constant truth and transparency. Thank you. That's a beautiful thing. And we'll see you all next week ready to play.
It's authentic,
thank
too,
you.
I'll tell
you. Thanks, everyone.
Okay.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Thanks, Michael.
Bye, y'all.
Bye. Bye.